Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
The journey is a sequence of events that got us to where we are today. It's the good, the bad, and the ugly. But when we look back, we can see where we are and look to where we want to go. Our journey gets us prepared for the next step. Our journey is a testimony to others that they can accomplish the same things we have. They see the possibilities. Welcome to Journey Radio. This morning, we have three dynamic women in the studio to share with us their passion for service and why it has given them the opportunity to make an imprint on our community. First, we have Erin Lyons, and she's the CEO of Child Parent Centers, which is the grantee for Head Start in Tucson or Southern Arizona. They service 2,500 children, and I quote Erin saying that since 90% of child's brains develop by the time they're five, it's essential to get them into early years, to get to them in the early years, and that really lays the foundation of their success. And that's a testimony to the expertise that Child Parent Centers provides for early childhood development. And then I look to my right and I see Desiree Cook, who is the founder of I Am 360, and she services foster care or homeless youth. And what her mission is to make sure that they're empowered to be their best selves and just have those life skills that makes them successful. And then further to my right is Anita, and she's a pastor here in Glendale, Arizona. She's also the founder of Diamond Daughters. And when I think about Diamond Daughters, I think about the diamond that has gone through the press of the coal and came out sparkling and shining that we want to wear on our finger. But her motto is, I am you, you are me, we are one. And today, the motto that she had for her empowerment session, our summit, was, and I quote, well, she's speaking to successful, powerful women. And that's what we have in the room today. Welcome.
Good morning.
Well, this morning, I'd like to throw this question out to each one of you and just feel free to join in the conversation, because that's what we have here on Journey, is a conversation with you. So the first thing is, what does your organization have to offer the community, whether it's in Tucson, in Phoenix, or in Glendale, or the United States at large? We'll start with you, Erin.
Great. Well, good morning, Enid and Anita and Desiree. It's wonderful to be here with the three of you this morning, and I really appreciate the opportunity. As you mentioned, Enid, my name is Erin. I have the pleasure of serving as the CEO of an organization called Child Parent Centers. We're based in Tucson, Arizona, but we serve five counties in the southern part of the state, and we are the Head Start grantee for Southern Arizona. So that means we receive federal grant money from the federal government in the country to operate Head Start programs. And a lot of people are familiar with Head Start. They generally know that it's a federally funded preschool program, which is absolutely true. And it started in 1965 under President Lyndon Johnson as part of his war on poverty. What's, I think, even more remarkable than the fact that it's been around for more than 50 years, and that's a testament to the quality of the services in the Head Start model, but it's really about child and family well-being mm-hmm. and self-sufficiency. So it's much, much more than a preschool program. Mm-hmm. And it has evolved over the years. It started actually just as a summer program. And so it was an 8-week summer program. And then it's evolved to full day, full year in some locations. And also it's increased to include children birth to 3, whereas it originally started out with 3 and 4-year-olds. So prior to their entry into kindergarten. And we also serve pregnant moms. And so when you hear about Head Start, you might hear about comprehensive services. That means that it includes school readiness, which is your kind of, you know, typical preschool classroom, the academic focus, then also health and nutrition, The model recognizes that if you have children who are not healthy, they maybe have severe oral, tooth pain, or they're undernourished, then if those situations are going on for them, then they really can't focus on, learning academic skills, right? So you've got to have the health and nutrition component. And then you also have to have the family engagement component. Children come with parents. And so even, the best program that's a preschool program, those children are still going to go home and have their families. And so the family involvement is a critical component. And so we encourage a lot of volunteerism in the classrooms with our parents. And then we also have some adult education programs as well, so that the parents themselves, it might be a GED program, it might be English as a second language opportunity, it might be a job skill, a kind of workforce development emphasis, so that they also have the opportunity to develop their own skills for self-sufficiency. So I tell my staff all the time, I fully believe this is the most important work they can be doing. We have the opportunity to literally change lives every single day that we interact with our children and our parents. And so I'm delighted to be here with you this morning. Thanks, Enid.
Oh, thank you. Desiree, I am 360. I believe in Arizona Daily Star, they said that 360's mission was just to make kids feel good and look good. Tell us a little bit more about it.
Absolutely. First, excuse me, I do want to thank all you queens, Enid, for having us and being in the presence of Erin as well as Anita. And that's absolutely a fact. Feel good is very important to your behavior and your mindset. So we believe truly that children that primarily that are in foster care or homeless, they're individuals and they're not just a barcode, that it is really important for them to be able to look good and not look like their circumstance. And self-esteem and personal appearance is really critical to your behavior, academic success, simply even school attendance. And so we really are focused on the, I would say, the exterior part of having access, even playing field, to body wash, deodorant. You'd be surprised in having simple things mm-hmm. that we take for granted, and the impact, and more importantly, the direct impact that would have on a child that's in that situation. And then also we really believe that the healing process and restoration is really important, and for them to be able to identify that they're not alone, that there are others in a community. And that's the message that we're sending, that I am you. Mm-hmm. And how can we arrive and lift each other up and have a sense of wholeness, a sense of completion, and make a complete turnaround? We do believe that low self-esteem is attached to decision making. So a lot of mistakes can be made during that time of having low self-esteem and poor confidence. And so with that, we want them to know that they can not only forgive themselves, but again, make that turnaround for themselves, but then be able to reach back and pay it forward to someone that is sharing that same reflection or that same mirror. So that is the main focus, is internal restoration, but then that outer piece that a lot of us take for granted, primarily in our target, it's mostly focused on housing and clothing and food, which is great. But then what about them as an individual, who they are, and self-discovery, so that they can develop their ads to the world? Really important.
Great. And then we have the Diamond. Anita, tell us a little bit more about Diamond Daughters.
I definitely want to say I'm definitely glad to be here this morning. Thank you so much for having us this morning. Ingrid, Desiree, Erin, just such so honored to be here. Definitely feel a lot of excitement in the room this morning for everything that is happening. And just to tell a little bit about Diamond Daughters, we deal more with the inner, trying to get that inner change so that that outer can match the inner. Because so many times we try to change the inner, we change the outer, but the inner is still, not where it needs to be. And so we take more of a holistic approach to deal with the whole man, so that once they discover why they do what they do, then we can begin to reconcile them, bring them where they need to be. So Diamond Daughters definitely deals with a diamond in the rough. We deal with that whole process of how a diamond goes through so much just to become a diamond. That's really our pattern right there. That's really our blueprint. And we bring that in such a tangible way to the individual where they can see themselves through that process that the diamond go through. And so we've had an opportunity to walk some people through that process, and it has been absolutely amazing to see some of the results that have happened, you know, with them just walking through that process. So just taking a holistic approach, dealing with the mind, inner thinking, I'm big on transformational thinking. I really don't deal with the word change. I deal with transformation, because you can change and you can change back. But one thing I've discovered is if you're transformed, you can't change back. And so we deal with a lot of being transformed, really putting that inside, really getting that in the inner man about the importance of being transformed. And so it is, we get diamonds in the rough and we polish them up. And then once they're polished up, they're ready to go out there and go into all of society in different areas and shine like the diamond that they are and accomplish what they have never accomplished before.
Great.
I think if I could jump in and and just say, listening to the two of you talk also about your agencies and the work, what excites me about it is we've got the whole continuum, the age continuum represented here, right? So we're talking about not only children birth to five who are in our centers, our preschools, or maybe they have home visits. We have some family educators who go out and meet with parents in the home and talk to them about, you know, child development and their role as parents. But then up through your agencies, we have older children as well, and then on into adulthood. And I think a commonality is around the individual, right? And the leadership potential within each individual, whether it's a child who's three or a parent or an adult who's, you know, over 30 or 40, right? Younger than I am. But so I find that really, really exciting about the work. And it's so really important, I think, to be talking about that and each individual's potential and the work that we do individually, but then also collectively in our agencies, right, to help the folks that we work with reach their potential. So that's exciting.
I definitely just want to chime in and agree, because you think of the infancy stage and then the teens and then the adulthood. There's such great passion with those three. You know, we've all experienced that. We're now in our adulthood, but so much story is in between the lines, so to speak. So it's such a great journey to see that there are agencies that are pouring into lives. And like, you know, Anita said, the transformation, but it starts even at a young age. And so I just love the fact that we're so cohesive and like-minded, where those different patterns of life become truly powerful.
Just to jump in one more time also, we also provide mentorship. We walk with them through the process. You know, we don't just get them out of the rough and say, here you go, this is how you do this. We actually walk with them through the process. And so we've been able to walk with women through the process of being active in their children's life, with school systems, going to their sport, going to events that they have that they may have never been out to. And so seeing the excitement that it brings to the child and seeing the completion that it brings to the whole family is absolutely amazing. So I would agree that it all goes together. And so our belief is, if you get them healthy, then you can definitely, you know, we all deal with health, the health of the family. And so when we get the minds healthy and get them healthy, we see great success. So it's amazing what you're doing.
And I do want to piggyback on what you said as far as the transformation. I am a woman who owns my truth, and I came from drug addiction, incarceration, children in foster care, was able to actually, you know, get my children back. And that was one of the reasons why I started my nonprofit, was to share my story. But when you say transform and then become proactive in your children's life and be at their sporting events and involved in school, and become a whole person. And if it wasn't for mentors that I had in my life, I would not be able to actually do what I'm doing right now in the present. So that part of from difference between change and transformation is huge in making that 360, literally. So I want to thank you for the work that you're doing.
And I know that we've heard about Desiree's journey and how she got to where she is right now, but I'd like to hear both from Aaron and also from Anita. What was your journey that brought you to the point of serving for Head Start or for Diamond Daughters?
What brought me to the point of, thank you so much, but what brought me to the point of being passionate about Diamond Daughters was just my own life within itself, just being so lost out there, you know, coming from that background also, like Desiree said, being on those drugs, not knowing who I was, just getting involved with any and all things, having, you know, a child at a young age, not really being active. So just, you know, that right there really motivated me because I felt like, you know, I missed a lot. But one day, you know, it was like I went to a women's conference or something and I heard a few words and those words, they played and played in my head. And so it was at that point I decided I was ready for purpose. I was ready for destiny and I was ready to do something different. And it was that place that when I came to that place that I rose up and began my journey of my identity and to who I was called to make an impact in someone else's life. And so that was kind of what motivated me for Diamond Daughters and to pull out the diamond inside of everyone because the diamond in me was pulled out by others helping me.
Great. Wow,
that's lovely. My journey, and that's such an appropriate title and term, you know, for us to talk about our work because we do all have personal journeys, I think, that have, right, that have right. brought us to, yes, obviously, absolutely. To the professional work that we do. And so my journey really started in my own preschool age as a child who loved school. So I'll just own that right up front. I just always loved school. I know that might be a little odd, but you know, I was the kid who really enjoyed reading and I liked all the school supplies and all of that. And when I was 10, I was in fifth grade and had a really inspiring teacher. And that was the first time that I thought to myself, very consciously, oh, this is what I want to do. I want to be a teacher. And so I held on to that. I had some other interests along the way, but by the time I graduated from high school and headed to college, I was set that education was going to be my field. So I got to college and I went to a prestigious university. I'll just say, and the reason I mentioned that is because my journey, I had some serious decisions to make being at that institution because I didn't get any support from anyone at the university to be an educator. I had my advisor tell me, my dean tell me, other professors tell me, other students tell me, you're here at this Ivy League institution. Why do you want to be a teacher? You can always do that later. Go do something else. And so it was a real gut check for me. And so I actually decided to take a year off after my sophomore year and figure out what I was going to do. I was working, you know, I was working in order to put myself through school, and I really needed to evaluate if I wanted to work so hard to put myself through a school that didn't value education, which I thought was really kind of paradoxical, right? So, and ironic. So I took a year off from school and I went and worked in a school in the west side of Chicago. And I had read about a woman who owned her own school and she was working in the inner city of Chicago and she was doing some really inspiring work in the community there. And so I wrote her and I said, this is my situation. I'm evaluating what I'm doing. Can I come work with you? And so she said, yes. So I moved to Chicago and went and worked with her for a year. And then I decided that I still really confirmed my goals to be an educator. And so I did switch schools, got my degree in teaching, and then taught after that. So along the way, when I was teaching, I realized education, as important as it is, it's much more than what occurs in a classroom setting only. And that there's so many experiences that children bring with them mm-hmm. to the classroom. And so I really began to focus on equity issues in education and feeling like there is such a tremendous gap in terms of the access that many young people in our communities across the country have or don't have. Mm-hmm. So then I began working in child welfare, actually. I was in Chicago and then moved to Tucson and worked in child welfare in that system for quite some time and saw even more gaps in equity, and also really realized, came back to the focus on early childhood, because in child welfare, when I first started working in that system, I was working with adolescents. And so it's very difficult to undo or help course correct for someone who's experienced 15 or 16 years of trauma and abuse, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And felt like, okay, if we can get to these children at the earliest age possible, then we have a much better chance to help change the trajectory of their lives. And that's exactly what Head Start does. And as I mentioned before, not only do we work with the children, but we work with the parents. And the goal is really to help increase the equity, meaning that children have access to the highest quality education setting that there is out there, so that they develop the confidence and the curiosity, the intellectual curiosity and other, and then, you know, the emotional wherewithal and awareness to help make their own decisions for themselves and really enhance their well-being. So circled back around, but so always been in education. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm listening, and the thing that comes to me is the importance of a nonprofit. So I know that all of you guys belong to a nonprofit. What is the importance of a nonprofit in our community?
I'll jump in on that one. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that comes to mind first when you ask that question is people who work in nonprofit agencies typically are very mission driven. And so there's a particular passion that they bring, and often that passion is grounded in their personal experience. And so they know firsthand the positive impact that a particular program can have in someone's life. And so people, when they work in nonprofits with that particular focus and carrying out a very specific mission, then they pour all of their energy into that. And they're really about making whatever change that nonprofit has been designed to have. And so people, you know, typically have very good intentions and again, pour all of their energy into making change for others.
And I just want to add to that. It is, for me, it's personal. Mm. It's so personal. It is my baby. But it does, I sleep well at night. The joys of interacting and seeing the change and the learning the steps of transformation for a better you. It's priceless. That feeling, and you do put blood, sweat, and tears, so to speak, into your passion and whatever that may be. But it to see the reward, again, you can't put a price on that. But it is such a, it helps you become even more well-rounded. So as I'm working with different youth and young adults, you know, I let it be known that I'm not here just for you to learn from me, mm-hmm. but we all leave better. I can learn from you just as well as you can learn from me. So that to me is just so empowering. And even their attitude is more open to receive whatever goodness that you want to deliver. And so for that, again, I just find great joy. It just really makes me a very happy person.
I would say also being passion driven, and along with being passion driven, you're able to connect with others who have that same passion or are like-minded. And so when you're building different components to the nonprofit, that also helps, because you're dealing with like-minded people who have the same passion. So you're able to develop a culture for the nonprofit organization based around or structured around the passion that maybe that you have for a particular thing. So that's what I believe that nonprofit, how they are very beneficial to the community. The nonprofits are very beneficial to community is that they're passion driven. You know, you put a lot of passion into it and you bring others alongside when you're building different components that have that passion and not just someone looking to do something.
Right. And I've been in it from day to day, and I just love the feeling that you were right in the middle of your passion and everybody had a like goal and you could see it happen in real time. That was the passion. But right now I'm serving on the board of Head Start, and that's where I give because I want to give back to the children, call them my babies. It's just a wonderful feeling just to go and read to them or either be in the board reading, the boardroom, working on the strategic plan, whatever we can do just to help our youth come up. And so that's where I am today. But as I sit in this room, I see each one of you guys, and I'm with Desiree. I'm almost moved to tears because of what we all do and because of the why. Okay, so right now, can you tell me one of those stories? Because I know that I'm moved, you're moved, and there's always some special event or story that's happened in your life that made you want to keep going, and you want to tell that story everywhere so then everybody know how important it is to touch our youth, our babies, our women. Can you start off with it, Anita? I can see in your eyes you're like ready to go. What is that great story?
Yes, yes. Thank you so much. We have an absolutely phenomenal story. So just the course of time of working with Diamond Daughters, I've had, for one, this young lady to come to us. She was a mother of six children. She had a felony. She had a felony on her record. She was on governmental assistance, just really didn't know which way to go. And so we were able to work with this young lady, all six of her children. As a matter of fact, since she's been with us, four of them have graduated. Wow. And three of them are now attending college. And we were able to help her reshape her thinking. She now has a job that she's a supervisor. Wow. And she wouldn't have never, ever dreamed because of her felony record. And so she is just absolutely amazing. She's in the process of getting ready to be a first-time homeowner. She was able, we walked her through a process. She was able to purchase a car for every one of her college kids, cash, that they could go. And now she's in the process that for Christmas, she's not buying them $180 shoes that she can't afford. She's putting it in a savings account. That's what we show her. And she has been one of our great success stories. We've highlighted her, given her awards. We had a big ceremony for her that really encouraged her and, you know, kept her. So that's our story. That's one of the stories that we always tell concerning the story. So now we're in the process of getting her felony record expunged, maybe looked at, set aside so that she can even do greater within the community. But she has had some great community support from just her going out doing great things. So that's one of our stories.
It's a great story. Desiree, do you have a story that you'd like to share?
So I think for mine, it's bits and pieces to, you know, where we're at today. The impact, I would say, for our first delivery, didn't know what we were doing, right? Just called some agencies and said, hey, this is what we want to do. We weren't even a nonprofit officially yet. But I talked to some girlfriends and just wanted to say, hey, I want to provide some hygiene items. So next thing I know, I got, you know, friends and family coming to the house with bags of hygiene. And we made it like we start calling it a pack the bag party. We would just sit around and, you know, have a good time, great fellowship, and start packing the bags. The interesting thing was, is that we were able to get the girls' ages and ethnicity so that we could really personalize and customize the bags to you. And then we were able to make that delivery on Martin Luther King Day. So it was very just a great day. And I was able to have my husband and my children along by my side. And so at this particular group home, you know, a lot of kids that we actually work with, they don't have a lot of, they don't have trust. Mm-hmm. You know, they struggle with trust, I should say. And so, you know, it's like, okay, somebody's here again. So, you know, the house manager was like, hey, somebody said you have a guest. And they were like, you know, didn't have the most welcoming attitude, which I get. And so as they were starting to come out, I just did a brief, you know, presentation as to say why we were there. And to see their response once they started opening the bags and their eyes were dancing and, you know, look what I got and let me smell yours. And, you know, I knew that we were onto something. I knew that was direct impact. And so one of the young ladies wanted to show the items that they're used to getting, right? And they have stockpiles of it. It's like a off brand that really has no benefit to hair or skin. And so she said, that's why it's just stockpiled, because we need something like this. And so, you know, the many stories go on. One young man in one of the group homes, he said, it's not just the bag. Like, he sent me an email literally in a group home. It's a bag of confidence. So it just really spoke volumes to not only me, but our board and those that, you know, are so willing to roll up their sleeves for something, again, that we just go to the store and we just buy it. We buy what we like, the smell good and whatever that is. But there's thousands of children and teens that don't have that access. And so it could really just make such a difference. But, you know, like I said, there's so many different stories that we've had. You know, is this my bag? And so it's not just, you know, a bag. It's a bag that it's a drawstring bag that they can keep. It's reusable, use it for whatever other purposes. And then we refill it every 6 weeks. So that kind of helps build relationships in addition to the other things that we do provide for them. But to know that there is that place that's not judging, their dignity stays intact. And everything is very hands-on. It's not like, oh, your bag is over there on the floor. No, it goes from one person's hand with that eye contact and service with a smile to you. And it's something that they don't really get often in their travels. And so it's just really important that we're here to serve you. And so the feedback has just been tremendous. And, you know, because the numbers are increasing and then the refill, they're, you know, ready for their refill before it's even time, which is even great. Something we need to work on and see if we could even get closer than 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. But just that alone just makes you just want to keep going, you know, press the, you know, the gas pedal, so to speak, and, you know, advancing in your community and then expanding mm-hmm. Outside of your community. So much work to be done. But that right there is
it's priceless. Wow. Mm-hmm. I call it confidence in a bag. Mm-hmm. That's so awesome. Erin, mm-hmm. So what's your story?
Right. Well, these are so inspiring. And I'm actually glad, you know, you just said confidence in a bag, because that's what I was going to pick up on in terms of what Desiree was sharing. So at Child Parent Centers, as I mentioned, we obviously work with children who are in the Head Start program. So we have a number of classrooms and literally thousands of children that we serve every day in that setting. But with the confidence in a bag theme, I'm going to focus on the parents. So I'd mentioned we have a significant program component of family involvement. And one of the ways that we do that is we have parents who are elected by their peers of other parents at each of our locations. We have 43 locations. And so there becomes a parent representative. Each location has a group of parents, like a parent committee, right? But then that committee represents one or elects one representative to then be part of this larger group of 43 parents. From there, they get elected into different advisory committees, and including what's called a policy council, which is just like a board of directors, but it consists wholly of parents. And so each year they have to be elected. They have to go through that process to serve on the policy council. So they're 1-year terms and they're elected each year. And then we have six officers of that group who then are also elected and then also serve on the board of directors. So they're on the policy council as well as on the board. And so at the end of each year, we do a wrap up and, you know, the parents kind of reflect on their experience for the year and what they've learned from it and what it's meant to them. And so they talk about what it's meant for their children and how their children have grown during the year. But then they also talk about what the experience has meant for them. And so just a few quick highlights that have been really exciting in the last year is we had a parent who served on the policy council when she had a child in the program. And after that year, then she got elected to serve on the school, the elementary school where her child went, on the parent-teacher organization. And then she got a job with the school after that. And so she said, you know, it was really so exciting to have that confidence. I never would have had that confidence if I didn't serve on the policy council and learn what it means to be in that kind of role. Then we had a session with our policy council a number of months ago where one of the members is a realtor. And she was doing a little professional development with her peers and talking about how to get financing and the importance of home ownership and, you know, in building wealth, and that a lot of people with lower incomes don't necessarily think that they're able to own a home, but it really can be possible with some planning and very specific strategies. So that it was about 5 months later, one of the parents said, "We bought our home. We listened, you know, I worked with her and we went through the process and now we've bought a home." So that was really exciting. And then we have another parent, a father, who has been on the policy council this year and wants to run for a local school district governing board.
Wow.
And then we have another father who at the beginning of the year had never spoken in front of a group of people and ended up being the chairperson of the policy council. So he had to facilitate every meeting during every month of the year. And then last month, end of July, spoke in front of 600 people and shared his story. He's from the Navajo community, so actually opened up his speech, speaking in his native language, and then talked about families as leaders and what he's learned through this experience and how important that, you know, his role as a father specifically, but then also that just families as a whole unit are leaders, right? And it's just, it's really, really powerful and inspiring. So yeah. I give a lot of credit to our parents and how courageous they are to take on this role. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, Erin, the change that I've seen or the shift is that now fathers are coming out. You know, we've always had the mother's involvement, but then the fathers are coming out, and we have a president of the mm-hmm. policy committee right now is a gentleman. Mm-hmm. And then I'm interested to hear about your how that you feel the shift has happened where the dads, the men are coming up as men and becoming fathers.
So I know that there are a lot of fathers who have stepped up mm-hmm. And are now we are seeing more faces of the men that are proactive in our programs, and we truly celebrate them. You know, we really, and so I believe that we're part of a Speak Life movement, and it is all about speaking life to other people. Mm-hmm. And you'd be surprised, that is a seed, and that we want to continue to nurture, you know, not only in our men, but, you know, in everybody that we come in contact with. But it's something about that man. And then we're hoping that as they're journeying, you know, through life, that others are watering that seed for them to continue, you know, stepping up in their fatherhood, manhood, and not look at it as a sign of weakness, mm-hmm. that you're taking care of your children, but a sign of strength, mm-hmm. which is really, really important to break the cycles of a lot of children. Maybe they could lead other men to step up if necessary and just be proactive in a child's life, doing more rather than leaving that role to the woman, to the mom to do, and saying, you know, I got this, and, you know, and be a constant in that child's life.
That's great. One of the things that we see is, first of all, if you can get that, most of the time when you can get the woman, the inner healing of the woman, mm-hmm. then she'll have more communication with the dad, because what we see a lot of times, she's done it for so long by herself and she's become so angry and so bitter at times, she wants nothing to do with the father. Mm-hmm. And so we come back and show her reasons, you know, maybe if he had different things, he would have did different. So we bring, you know, healing in that inner so that they can have a relationship with the father. And what we have been able to see is that once that happens, they have a relationship with the father. And so they're okay with letting the father come visit, letting the father step up, even though the father may not have been there for some years. Once that process takes place, they're able to co-parent together and build a relationship for the child that has nothing to do with their personal matters. We refocus them, redirect them to the purpose of the child. And we are seeing fathers come in and step up. And not only that, it's also a time to create avenues for the father and for the child to come together and have some time together themselves that maybe they had lost time. So we're seeing definitely mm-hmm. fathers come into the children's life more than what we have seen before.
That's true. And now we've transitioned. We've seen the whole family. We always have the mother. We have the fathers. But then what can the community do to make your nonprofits more robust?
So I would say for IMU 360, because we are a grassroots organization, mm-hmm. so we are small but mighty and touch hundreds of lives, is to share, you know, get to know us. But something simple as hosting a hygiene drive, mm-hmm. right? Full size. We are really now focusing, being unapologetic, and asking for African American hair care products, which is so needed, cultural piece for hair and skin. I really feel like that's a timid conversation. Mm-hmm. So we are now bringing that to focus and showing that as a need. Financial donations, because we do have at-risk youth running. It's like a workforce program and they're running our dispensaries. So we are able to give them a stipend so to keep that going. But you'd be surprised, we are preparing them for their learning Excel spreadsheet, their learning communication skills, and learning how to be their own voice, right? And interacting wow. with their community. So we actually have student employees at two schools that we're partnered with. But we do want to extend that also to other schools and have student employees and let that be their own it. But we do want to be able to bless them, I should say, for the work that they put into it and that passion with the stipend. So that would be also very helpful. And then we've grown so much. I just want to add, because you never know, is that we need a fully operational building, yes. right? Where we can have an aged out foster care adult to be our receptionist, to have a shipping and receiving department so that we can ship hygiene bags and items outside of our Tucson community. Right. Extended even to Phoenix. So maybe we're not have a physical building in Phoenix, but we could have aged out young adults where they're employed, they're learning skills, and to really be not only just the working piece of it, but then they're learning self-discovery, positive thinking, and be good to your mind, which are part of our IMU 360's curriculum, so that they can become well-rounded. But then again, still going back to the reach back and pay it forward. Mm-hmm. So that is our greatest hope, is to have a fully operational building. You never know unless you put it out there, and to embrace, but more importantly, I should say, to serve more. It's all about the increase of numbers. Mm-hmm. And I feel that because we don't have that, we are a little limited. We still are, you know, really strong in what we do. But just imagine the increase in this, more seeds that could be planted mm-hmm. within our community. So building, financial support, and hygiene donations.
That's great. And I hear also that this service will also help people give back what they've been given.
Yes.
And keep the organization growing and keep it strong.
Yes. And that'd be mm-hmm. another opportunity for volunteers, more volunteers to come. And then we could also have educational workshops there because we do teach cultural hygiene workshops. We can also have evening classes because where we're located now, we're in the school. So that evening portion is a little bit hard, but we could have a central place where families, foster care parents can come to get cultural hygiene classes. We could also do our 9-week curriculum there. So the impact would just be so much more plentiful. And that's our mission, plant seeds of hope, right, so that we could watch our youth grow and become fruitful. And I feel that we've grown within our 4 years of life, that the opportunity is endless in the lives that could be directly impacted.
Right. So great. And can you tell us a little bit about what the community can do for child parent centers, Erin?
Absolutely. For child parent centers, or CPC for short, Head Start in Southern Arizona, there are a few things. I think for pretty much all nonprofits, financial contributions are always helpful and welcome. And in our case, because we do have federal funding, it's very restrictive in terms of what it can be used for. And so as an agency, we're certainly looking to increase our unrestricted funding, and that would be used for things like parent professional development. We do send parents to conferences sometimes outside of the state, and that really helps connect them to other Head Start parents across the country, and really is a once-in-a-lifetime kind of experience for a lot of our parents. So that would be an example of something that we could do with dollars. So dollars are always helpful. Volunteering is also an option, and there would be a couple specific things. One is, Enid had mentioned, you know, just reading a book in a classroom. Doesn't take a lot of time, doesn't take tons of energy, and it's guaranteed to brighten your day. Just seeing the little ones, you know, you might have to manage a lot of questions and, you know, a lot of kind of chatter and excitement. But I don't know anyone who hasn't come away, you know, with a huge smile on their face after visiting a preschool classroom. Another way to volunteer would be to go through something a little more formal. We do have a number of volunteers who work with our adult literacy program to help teach, again, English as a second language, or some coaching for a GED for parents. So volunteering would be another step. And then I would say too, you know, stepping back and doing something broader is paying attention to vote, right? So paying attention to who is running to be an elected official to represent our communities, and what do they stand for in terms of education and the other kinds of topics that we're discussing here this morning? What support do they show for the community and all of our communities, so that we're all represented in our local and our state and our national legislatures and in Congress? With early childhood education in particular, I know, you know, not everyone really understands the importance. A lot of times people will say, well, you know, a parent really should be at home with their child before they go to kindergarten. And you know, some families have the opportunity and the means to make that choice, and other families don't. And for families who don't have that opportunity, their children need to be in a high quality setting so that that child has the absolute best start and then will be a contributing healthy citizen that really contributes to our community. And so it matters who's sitting in our city councils and our county governments and our state governments. And so pay attention to who's running, ask questions, reach out, ask them what they stand for and what they believe in, and are they in support of the communities that we serve.
And I like what I hear. And so who are you partnering with? Because I know with Head Start, we're not just about Head Start, but there's so many other organizations that support our children also.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So certainly our school districts in our service area, again, we're in 5 counties in Southern Arizona, and there are 16 school districts that we work with. And so one example of something that we do is kindergarten transition activities. So we have 4-year-olds who, you know, move from our program into the elementary school. And so we want to make sure that we have really strong relationships with the districts that are receiving our kiddos. And then there are a number of other community agencies, such as foster care agencies, because we do serve children who are in the foster care system. We do serve children in families that are experiencing homelessness. So there are a number of agencies in our communities that work with those families. And so we certainly partner with them. There are other agencies who come in and do some literacy, professional development with our staff and with families to make sure that children are getting books in their hands at the earliest age possible. Even infants, you know, they know what it means to be read to. And, you know, when they get older, then they can start turning the pages. They repeat the stories. All of those actions are foundations for literacy that make a difference. And in Arizona, it matters if a child can read by the time they're eight. Otherwise, they can get held back. And then that, you know, again, sets a trajectory for the rest of their academic career, which then has implications in all aspects of their their life. So number of partners, absolutely.
Yes. Yes. So Diamond Darters, what can we do to help you?
We always look for volunteer. Like Erin and Desiree have both said, of course, finances are always a need, but we always look for volunteers to help with some of the coaching, some of the classes, and to also just build that bridge between us and the community. So I would just say a volunteers especially.
Yes. And then I want to circle back around to what Erin was speaking to just earlier. And it's something that's a passion to my heart because I called Head Start when I was at home. I was a stay-at-home mom for about 7 years, and I wanted my daughter to get a head start, you might say, on education. And, you know, but of course, it wasn't a place for me. But what it inspired me to do was to teach my children how to read so then they would be ready for school. And they were ready for school. They were reading. My son read at three. That takes us back to how active the brain is at 3 years old. And so what have you guys seen as education being an integral part of a child's development? Because we have it from early childhood education, then we have them at the youth, and then at the, and then you catch the adults, Diamond Darters. And so that's very important. So what happens when it starts at the beginning, if we're able to catch them at before 5 years old, as Erin says?
So for me, I believe it is a learning, you know, social skills and interacting with others and decision making, but also the sense of accomplishment, the accolades that go with it. And then also, even if you struggle, you know, like I wasn't, you know, math wasn't my specialty, but to be able to take on that challenge, what is a challenge, and learning adversity at a young age, because certainly to me, as you get older, you're going to have challenges in life. And how do you overcome? How do you problem solve? Mm-hmm. So I really think that's very, very important, not only from a young age, but to, you know, take on that sense, keep on with that fire, I should say, even in the school age. And then even taking a challenge, whether it's, you know, trade school, that opens so many doors to even becoming an entrepreneur, you know, but you'd be surprised of the impact from that early age and embracing it, even though you may not be the best student. But I was at school every day, and you have that, again, the sense of accomplishment that you started something and then you finished it.
Yeah, that is so, so beautifully stated. And I think the one of the really significant things about early childhood, particularly birth to three, is the interactions with another caring and responsive caregiver, right? And so typically that's going to be a parent or parents, maybe it's grandparents or other members of the extended family, or maybe it's in a setting outside of the home and a foster family or whatever it is. But we know that young children need responsive, loving caregivers, and those literally change the science of the brain, and they lay the foundation for then that child's readiness to learn a whole host of other skills, including the ones that you just mentioned, Desiree. And those really are the skills that are foundational for not only success in school, but success in relationships, success in a work setting as they get older. So all of the architecture of the brain is being developed in the first 3 years, 90% by 5 years. And so they can learn it later, but it takes longer and it's harder because the habits really come more easily when a child is younger. And so it sets the skills not only academically, but socially, emotionally, the habits for healthy living with nutrition and wellness, confidence, all these things we've been talking about. That foundation is set in the first several years, and it really makes a difference in how a young child then grows into an adult, an adolescent, and then an adult.
Mm-hmm. It's very important. And then I love it that the community is actually coming out and saying, you know what, we see what the nonprofits are doing and we really appreciate it. And that's shown through the awards that Desiree has gotten for IMU 360. And she has been awarded by the AKA sororities for the nonprofit work that she's done, and also Sparkle Cleaners for Nonprofit of the Month, and then Vantage West for the Nonprofit of the Year. So that tells me, and it warms my heart, that our businesses are actually listening. Mm-hmm. And then we have also Anita Scott here, who's written the book. And so she's not just talking the talk, but she's putting it down where we can all learn a little bit from her. And it's The Power of Transformational Thinking. Can you tell us a little bit about your book?
Yes, I can. It is just, I call it a 40-day plan. It has 40, it gives 40 days that if you go through each day, it has little inserts on how to transform your thinking, how to deal with certain situations, how to deal with problem solving with different situations and circumstances that may arise. And so we actually have used this with our young people as a teaching component, and how to show them through the power of changing their thinking, transforming their thinking, that, you know, they can have a different outcome. So we don't just, it's not geared toward just our adult, but also our young people, our young teens. And we're very active with our young teen community. We go to their schools. We're very active with them. So I would say we start at elementary, this right here, teaching them this right here. And so it definitely, we have saw it changed a lot of their lives. So I agree with you. It's all about supporting these young babies and making sure that we follow them throughout. And I'm an advocate for it. So
yeah. And you can find that book on Amazon. I saw it last night. The Power of Transformational Thinking.
I know. I feel like I need to step it up over here. We got some awards. We got some authors.
Oh, but then, you know, Erin's not a slacker. She went through a lot of different tests, we'll say, right, when she first got on in 2014. And she passed them all with flying colors. And she's maintained her staff through the transition. And I must say, just sitting here and I'm looking at Erin, Desiree, and Anita, and my heart is just so full because of the great works that you're doing. But before we close out, we want to make sure that I hear how people can contact you. Erin, if you can lead us off.
Absolutely. So our website for Child Parent Centers is www.childparentcenters.org. And then we're also on Facebook and we're also on Twitter.
Great.
Our website for IMU 360 is www.iamyou360.org. We're also on Instagram, Facebook. We do encourage you to follow us. And that is it, I believe. Yeah. I'll make sure I covered everything.
We are www.aitruth.com. And we are also on Facebook, all over social media, YouTube. And so those are the ways that they can contact us.
Great. And I just want to thank you ladies for bringing your passion to the room, because I can feel it. Also for all the good work that you do for our children, our youth, and our women, because your work is what makes our community great. Thank you.